I'm Chris Kresser, and this is Revolution Health Radio. Hey everybody, Chris Kresser here. Welcome to another episode of Revolution Health Radio. This week, I'm very excited to welcome back Dr. Mark Hyman to the show. Dr. Hyman's a practicing family physician, a 10-time New York Times bestselling author, and an internationally recognized leader, speaker, educator, and advocate in the field of functional medicine. He's the Pritzker Foundation Chair in Functional Medicine at the Cleveland Clinic Lerner College of Medicine and the director of the Cleveland Clinic Center for Functional Medicine. He's also a founder and director of the Ultra Wellness Center, chairman of the Institute for Functional Medicine, medical editor of the Huffington Post, and a regular medical contributor in the media for CBS This Morning, Good Morning America, CNN, The Dr. Oz Show, and more. So I met Mark personally a few years ago. Of course, I've known about his work for many years. There is really no one else who's done as much to advance functional medicine as Dr. Hyman. And then over the past couple of years, I've gotten to know him personally and just really enjoy his balanced, nuanced approach and everything he does as an advocate for functional medicine and nutrition in the field. So I'm really excited to welcome Mark back and talk about his most recent book, Food, What the Heck Should I Eat? It's a great title. And I think a lot of people actually have that question at this point. We're so overwhelmed with so much conflicting, contradictory information that I think a lot of people have just thrown up their hands and really don't know what to eat. So that's what we're going to talk about in this episode. Hope you enjoyed as much as I did. Let's dive in. Hey everybody, Chris Kresser here. I hope this podcast and my blog and books have been helpful resources for you and will continue to be. But if you've been struggling with a chronic health problem and are feeling stuck, consider coming to work with my team and me at the California Center for Functional Medicine. We work with patients all over the U.S. and have experience treating a wide range of conditions, including GI problems, autoimmunity, hypothyroidism, cognitive mood and behavioral issues, weight gain and metabolic dysfunction, and more. Our unique model teams clinicians with nurse practitioners and health coaches, all of whom are trained in my ADAPT framework approach to provide a high level of care to our patients. This means more support between appointments, personalized guidance on diet, lifestyle, and behavior change, a cutting-edge patient portal with 24/7 access to your labs and records, handouts and resources to guide your protocols, and a team of practitioners working together on your case. We're currently accepting new patients, so if you'd like to learn more, visit chriskresser.com/become-a-patient. Okay, now on to the show. Mark, it's such a pleasure to have you back. Thanks for joining us again.
Of course, always so great to talk to you, Chris.
Okay, so before we jump in and start talking about food, which is what we're going to be mostly talking about today, I just want to kind of get some updates from you. It's been a while since we've chatted, and especially with you, there's never a dull moment. So what's been going on in your world, and how are things going at Cleveland Clinic Center for Functional Medicine, and what's new in your world?
So many things new. I got married. I was super sick last year.
Again.
Thank you. I was super sick and had to use the magic of functional medicine to fix myself and learn new things, and launched our Broken Brain documentary online. And it's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
I'm super excited about my new book, Food, What the Heck Should I Eat, which is, I guess, what we're going to talk about today. And it's really been a labor of love, and it's one of my favorite books that I've written out of 14. I think this is my favorite because it just gives people what they need. And what's so difficult for people is knowing how to sort through all the confusing, often conflicting advice about what is healthy nutrition.
Yeah, I mean, that's most people on the street now, I think, are feeling pretty overwhelmed at this point. They don't really know who to trust or what to believe. For many years, it was like eggs. I mean, I think there's some jokes about this, like eggs are good, eggs are bad, eggs are good, eggs are bad, eggs are good, eggs are bad. And, it was back and forth. And I think with enough of that, it's kind of people just start to tune out and they don't really believe anything, and they just, they're left to their own devices. So what's the deal? What's your take on why this has been so confusing and conflicted?
Conspiracy of actions from a whole different set of sectors that makes the consumer wondering, you know, what the heck they should eat and why there's so many conflicting opinions. One is science of nutrition is challenging because mm-hmm. it's hard to study what people eat. In a typical yeah. research study, you give someone a drug and another group, you would not give the drug and you'd follow them along for a year and you see what happens and you control everything else.
Yeah.
That's impossible with food. Unless you lock somebody up in an institution and only feed them certain foods and another group, you only feed other foods and you do that for 10 or 20 or 30 years, then you're going to get useful information, but no one's going to do that. So yeah. you have to sort of, you know, try to understand what studies show and what they don't show, what, you know, studies can prove cause and effect and what studies can't. And
right, and people are notoriously inaccurate when they report their food intake, right? That's another problem.
Yeah, there's also, you know, the bias. I mean, we'll talk about it, but meat's a great example. You know, meat was seen to be bad because it contains saturated fat. Saturated fat was thought to be bad. Anything that raised saturated fat in your diet was bad, so hence meat was bad. But there's no evidence that meat was bad. There's no studies that showing meat was bad. It was just guilt by association based on some pretty bad studies. And so people are confused about it. And during the time that the study showed that meat was bad was because the people who were eating meat didn't care about their health because everybody said meat was bad. So if you ate meat, you really weren't concerned about your health and you ate more mm-hmm. calories, you weighed more, you smoked more, you drank more, you didn't eat fruits and vegetables, you didn't exercise. The people who didn't eat meat in those studies exercised, ate healthy food, fruits and vegetables, didn't smoke, didn't drink too much. You know, took their vitamins, they were healthy. It wasn't because they didn't eat meat that they were healthier. It was because they had all these other healthy habits. And I think the reason that people who ate meat got sick was because they had all these unhealthy habits. And so you kind of have to look at the context of the study. So nutrition research is notoriously bad. Then there's money in the whole problem, which mm-hmm. is science is funded by different vehicles. One is industry and one is the government. And then there's philanthropy. Well, philanthropy isn't done a whole lot in the field of nutrition research, although that's changing. The government funds only certain kinds of studies, which aren't that helpful. And the food industry is funding studies that prove their products are healthy. If you look at the data, for example, on artificial sweeteners, almost 100% of the studies done by the food industry on their products find that they're safe, whereas almost 100% of studies done by independent researchers find that they're harmful. So, you know, you have to look at where the money's coming from. And then the third reason is, the government is not producing guidelines that match the science. Mm-hmm. If you look recently, the Congress mandated the National Academy of Sciences, which is the nation's highest independent science group, to look at how we come up with our dietary guidelines. And they published a massive report in November, I think, or October of 2017, where they outlined how corrupt the process was and how unduly influenced it was by industry and how the people on the guidelines committee worked for the Dairy Council and other industry trade groups and how they ignored huge amounts of data, for example, around saturated fat, which really has exonerated saturated fat, but still the government recommends to not eat saturated fat. So yes, it made some progress. It said we don't have to worry about fat anymore. Yes, it said we don't have to worry about cholesterol or eggs anymore. But there's still a lot of corruption in the guidelines, which then form all of our policies and recommendations. And then, of course, there's the public health and professional associations like the American Heart Association, the American Nutrition Dietetic Association, and their funding in large part comes from the pharma and the food industries. 40% of the American Nutrition Dietetic Association funding comes from junk food industry companies.
Yeah, I'll never forget our registered dietitian that we work with told me what was served at those conferences. It was all Nestle, you know, like sugar, basically. The entire table was sugar and it was low fat. So it's, you know, so-called healthy because it's low in fat, but it's all processed and refined sugar, basically.
Exactly. I mean, I also read a big meeting in California of the Nutrition Society. There was a mandatory lunch and the lunch was provided by McDonald's.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, that's just crazy. Okay. So we got all these three problems.
And then
really
there's one more, which is the media.
Yeah.
The media,
oh boy. Yeah. Just can't forget that.
Grabbing headlines and does a disservice to the consumer by latching on to various memes that actually are incorrect. Like the recent coconut oil controversy right. where the American Heart Association said that coconut oil is bad. And by the way, there's not a single study that shows that. There's, right. again, guilt by association, which mm-hmm. is it's got saturated fat. Saturated fat's bad, so don't eat it.
Yeah.
And the USA Today had the headline, coconut oil is not healthy, never was healthy. And so everybody just went in a tizzy, and it got so confused. I know you wrote about it. I certainly wrote about it. I mean, people are confused. I did a Facebook Live, and there was over 1.5 million views because people just are sort of desperate to know what to think. Right. So all these reasons lead to a confused eater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a big deal because food, you know, one of the fundamental tenets of functional medicine is that food is medicine. You know, and that's how it's different than conventional medicine, which is, you know, you go in, you have a chronic condition, generally you're going to walk out with a prescription for a drug, maybe some vague advice about eating healthier. But in functional medicine, of course, we approach it differently. So, you know, why? I imagine that was a big impetus behind you writing this book at this time, too.
Absolutely. Food is medicine. And I was so heartened to hear that one of my friends and colleagues, and you know him well, Dr. Darius Mazafarian, who's the mm-hmm. Dean of Tufts School of Nutrition, recently was in Washington holding a hearing on food as medicine and how we need to influence policy with this new understanding of the role of food in health and chronic disease. So I think that's moving forward. In the meantime, people are wondering, what the heck should I eat? And then, of course, there's other issues besides, you know, whether it's quote healthy or not. How is it affecting the environment? How is it affecting our soils and water and air and climate change? And how do we treat animals? And all these issues are so confusing for people. So should you eat GMOs? Should you not? Does it matter if you eat organic or not? What about food additives? Are there any safe? Are they bad? What about processed food? Are there any ones that you can eat? This is very confusing to people. And so I've taken my 30 years it's embarrassing to say now, 40 years of studying nutrition. God, I'm old.
Fantastic.
I started in Cornell in 1979 or 78, 79, then it's almost 2019. Mm-hmm. Holy cow. All right. Anyway, moving on. I've been studying nutrition that long. And the first book I read was Nutrition Against Disease by Roger Williams, about how food can be used to actually deal with chronic illness. And in that time, I really, you know, swung back and forth from being vegetarian and vegan to being, you know, low fat to being high fat to being paleo, all the way in between experiment. And I've done that with my patients. And I've probably read, like you, probably over 10,000 papers mm-hmm. on nutrition. And I've treated over 10,000 patients over 30 years. And I've seen the results of people doing different diets in real life, looking at all their biochemistry and hormonal regulation, their metabolism, there are other health conditions. And so this isn't just a theoretical book. This isn't just based on some scanning of literature and trying to put something into something that makes sense. This is a combination of my own experimentation, my work with patients, reviewing the literature, studying nutrition for 40 years, and coming up with just common sense, not extreme, you know, way to eat that actually follows the guidelines of most of the sort of trends out there. In other words, mm-hmm. you know, you've got vegan, you got paleo, you got raw food, you got keto, you got high fat, low fat, high carb, low carb. It's just, you know, it's pretty crazy for a consumer to figure out what should they do. So mm-hmm. I've taken all that and tried to synthesize it in really practical ways. It's not about individual nutrients. And you and I both write about those things. What about omega-6 mm-hmm. fats, or what about this ingredient? But at the end of the day, people eat food. They eat meat. They eat vegetables. Yeah. They eat chicken. You know, and so in my book, I go through each major food category: meat, poultry and eggs, dairy, nuts, seeds, beans, grains, vegetables, fruit, drinks, beverages, you know, sweeteners, and come up with what do we know, what do we don't know, and, you know, combined with sort of common sense and evolutionary biology, which is what you call ancestral nutrition, you know what makes sense, right? So that's really where I sort of came up with this idea of the book, is how do we sift through all that and give people a guide. It's sort of like a user's guide to eating.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so needed. And just, you know, it's something that shouldn't be that complicated, but as you've pointed out, has gotten really complicated. And it's, as I think, also taking people away from their own intuitive sense of what's right for them, which is a whole nother topic. But I want to talk a little bit more about meat, because that's obviously, you know, if we were to think of one thing that maybe causes more conflict and, you know, and sometimes even violent conflict, you know, from people who think we should eat it versus we shouldn't eat it. And I know this is an area where you've, changed, as you said, you've shifted, and both of us have been vegan in the past. I was a macrobiotic vegan at one point and a vegetarian, and both of us now eat meat. So, what was that? What led you to make that transition yourself? And, you know, what should we be looking at from your perspective now in terms of meat consumption?
Yeah, it is the big, sort of rallying point for controversy. And, I want to live to be 120. I have a young wife, maybe 140 if I can get there. And I don't want to do anything that's going to jeopardize that. And so, as just a human being, I want to know. And as a scientist and doctor, I had the ability to figure that out. And I locked myself in a room with a stack of the best papers on meat and research on meat, and we're about 3 feet high, for a week in a hotel room so I wouldn't be distracted. And I just read it all. And then I synthesized it, and I realized there's really, three main issues around meat. One is moral. And I have patients who are Buddhist monks, and if they don't want to eat animals, that's okay. Like, we can work around that. Yeah. Then there's, moral around how we treat our animals. And that's a fair concern around how we humanely can raise animals. And I want to talk about that. Yeah. Then there's the issue of environmental issue, which is very real. And our CAFO system of agriculture, confined feeding operations, these are factory farms using a lot of industrial inputs from oil through fossil fuels, through fertilizers, pesticides, herbicides to grow the food, enormous amounts of water through irrigation that depletes our aquifers, the runoff from the fertilizers damages the waterways, it causes dead zones and kills all the marine life, to the effect of climate change from the methane and the way we produce and grow food, and the depletion of our soils, which leads to the inability of the soils to sequester carbon, to our depletion of our aquifers from irrigation for the water, which leads to droughts, which is why we have this whole problem. So those are all real issues, and yet it's not about meat or no meat, it's how we raise the meat. And there's a movement of regenerative agriculture, which is fascinating, which is using animals to help build soil, which then sequesters carbon, retains water, and raises animals that have much higher quality meat and don't contribute to climate change and actually help reverse climate change, and that are humanely raised and actually are part of the natural agricultural cycle. Even organic agriculture, if you're eating a ton of plants that are grown in conventional tilling, organic agriculture, you're doing a little bit better avoiding pesticides, but you're not actually helping the soil, and you're contributing to climate change. And by the way, most plants are not vegetarians. Most plants are carnivores because organic food is fertilized with bone meal. And who knows where that comes from.
And a lot of animals are killed in that style of agriculture too. There's smaller animals, but then you start getting into the question of is a life, of a rodent any worth less than a life of an herbivore, for example. I mean, there's a film that I'm supporting, a friend and colleague of mine is making, called Kale versus Cow, the case for better meat. And she sent me a t-shirt I love, and that with the tagline, "It's not the cow, it's the how."
That's right. That's right. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Sums it up. It's not the cow, it's the how.
And there's a book coming out, or they just came out, called Kiss the Ground, and a movie, a documentary coming out with it as well, which talks about this whole movement of regenerative agriculture. So the whole issue of environmental issues can be addressed. We had 60 million bison that were in this continent that were raising, and they were building, they built literally tens of feet of topsoil over millennia, who knows how long they were here. And we had 60 million. And it's not the fact that we have so many cows, it's how they're raised and what they do. And the bison actually weren't contributing to climate change because of the way that they were roaming and grazing and restoring soils. And so that's a whole issue. So I think the environmental issues are right. I don't think anybody should eat CAFO meat, both for their health and for the environment. So then the third issue, other than moral, environmental, and is health. And then the question becomes, what does the data show about the effect of meat on our health? And when I began to look at that, it was all over the place. There were large studies that showed it was harmful, studies that showed it was helpful. And I mentioned earlier, if we look at the studies that showed the population studies, these are what we call observational or population studies. They don't prove cause and effect. What they do is they give people a food questionnaire every year, and they ask them what they ate, and tell them and see who died of what. And then they correlate do you think? But it's not, correlation isn't causation. I wake up every morning, the sun comes up. I had nothing to do with the sun coming up, right?
Don't be modest.
It's 100% correlated, right? I could do a study of women over 55 who have sex, and I would conclude 100% of the time that sex never leads to pregnancy. It's wrong, but it's right as far as the study goes.
Yeah.
So I think we have to sort of understand that. Now, when you look at the data of that, you find that, gosh, you know, the meat eaters in those studies were, which were done at a time when meat was evil, mm-hmm. didn't give a crap about their health. And they ate, yeah. like I said, they ate 800 more calories a day. They smoked more. They drank more. They didn't exercise. They didn't eat fruits and vegetables. So their results are confounded. And the people who didn't eat meat were trying to be healthy. So it wasn't the meat that was the problem. And of course, they were eating CAFO meat. And then there are studies that look at vegetarians and meat eaters who shop at health food stores.
Yeah.
Who, you know, would presumably have, you know, a healthy diet. So eating meat in the context of a healthy diet is a very different thing. So for example, today I had a big salad with arugula and pumpkin seeds and avocados and fennel and cherry tomatoes and olive oil. And I had like a few slices of grass-fed beef with it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I call a vegan diet, which is kind of a joke between paleo-vegan, but it's essentially eating meat in the context of an otherwise healthy diet. And the risk was reduced in half for both of those groups.
Yeah.
And then you look at interventional studies, which is a more reliable type of study where you actually give people, let's say, a paleo diet. I just saw an article today about women who eat more paleo, who are overweight, have much more weight reduction and health benefits than those who yeah. don't. And so you have to look at the interventional studies. And typically, you know, paleo diets are a little bit higher in fat, but there was, you know, there was another study published just recently where they looked at free, unlimited calorie diet that was high in fat and low in carbs and starch versus a diet that was restricted, low calorie diet that was high in carbs and low in fat. And after a year, the people who could eat as much as they want and include lots of fat lost far more weight. Yeah, so this article was just published, I think, today. It was called Paleolithic Diet Healthier for Overweight Women, looking at, you know, risk factors for diabetes and heart disease. It was done in Sweden, and they found that it made a huge benefit through a low glycemic diet. And so that was just published, I think, yesterday.
Yeah, and there's many others like it, you know, for blood sugar issues, metabolic problems, weight loss, changes in waist circumference, et cetera. So.
And I've seen an interesting study where they looked at, you might have seen this, Chris, but there was a study of Wagyu beef, which is like feedlot beef, mm-hmm. versus kangaroo meat. And the Wagyu beef, they looked at biomarkers in people who ate them, and they found there was a lot of inflammatory biomarkers, and inflammation is linked to every known chronic disease. And the people who ate the kangaroo lower their inflammatory biomarkers. Mm-hmm. So it's not only meat, it's the quality of the meat that you eat and what it contains. I mean, grass-fed meat has much higher levels of omega-3 fats, higher levels of antioxidants like catalase, glutathione. It has much higher levels of minerals, vitamins. So it's a very different food than if you're eating a feedlot beef. I mean, but however, if you don't have enough money and you can't eat a grass-fed cow, even sort of regular meat, I think, is a better option than eating a ton of carbs. So yeah. I think, you know, we kind of vilified meat because of the saturated fat, and I think that was really a mistake, and I can go deeply into that. But that was another reason why we thought meat was bad. And we've sort of, and I've talked about a lot of this on your show, but, you know, saturated fat isn't the boogeyman we thought it was. And in fact, the saturated fat in meat doesn't even raise your cholesterol. It's stearic acid. So it's like, it's not even the one that's a bad one. And the last issue is cancer. You know, what about meat and cancer? And I think, you know, we heard a lot of headlines last year about the WHO saying that meat causes cancer, processed meat in particular. And it was true. They found a correlation, not causation, correlation, with about a 20% increase in the risk of cancer, colon cancer, when people ate a lot of processed meat, like deli meats and hot dogs and things. But when you look at the data, you know, again, the statistics can be manipulated, right? So Roger Williams says there's liars, there's damn liars, and there's statisticians, right? So, you know, when you look at the statistic, 20% increase in it sounds terrible. What they really found was that was a relative increase. So the risk went from a background of the population of 5% chance of getting colon cancer to 6%. That's a 1% absolute increase. And that's only if you ate four pieces of bacon every day your whole life. Now, most people aren't going to do that. Yeah. And yes, you should be eating a ton of processed meats, but they can be part of a healthy diet, especially if they're raised sustainably and humanely and so forth. So I think that the whole issue around cancer is kind of a little bit overblown.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I've looked into that in more depth than I ever thought I would, just because, you know, it's such a rabbit hole and it's not easy to draw conclusions by just scanning a few studies. You really have to dig in. You have to look at the data and the tables and not even pay attention to the researcher's own conclusions, which are sometimes in conflict with their data. So it goes deep. You really have to look at it.
It's true. I read a study in JAMA once where they actually analyzed the abstracts and compared it to the data published in the study. And 50% of the time, the abstract conclusions didn't match the study results.
Right.
Which I thought was like, oh my God.
And do you remember that paper in the New England Journal of Medicine that suggested that a Mediterranean diet was better than a normal diet? And the implication was that, you know, red meat was bad. But when you looked at the tables, you saw that the Mediterranean diet people ate just as much red meat as the control group. So, you know, that stuff happens all the time. And unless you're really diving in and looking at it with that level of detail, you're just, if you're just reading abstracts or even worse, the media, you know, summary of the study, you're not going to get the real story. So, I mean, speaking of the real story, meat has caused a lot of confusion, but I think cholesterol has got to be right up there. I mean, that's how I got my start. My blog was The Healthy Skeptic. I started writing about the relationship between cholesterol and heart disease, you know, many, many years ago now. And, you know, I think most people who are above the age of 35 or 40 have grown up with that just absolutely drilled into their head that cholesterol is bad. If you eat cholesterol, it's going to clog your arteries. It's kind of the junk in the pipe metaphor. You know, cholesterol is junk or gunk, and you eat it and it clogs your arteries and you get a heart attack. So why then did the the U.S. for the first time ever remove the restriction on cholesterol in the diet?
Yeah, it's sort of sloppy thinking, this truth is. You know, we conclusions from insufficient evidence or no evidence just based on some theory. Just like we thought, oh, you eat fat, calories and carbs and protein, so it's going to make you fatter. So to lose weight, you eat low fat. The fat makes you fat. And it seems like a logical conclusion. It looks the same on your body. It's got the same name. Like it just seems like logical, just like cholesterol. You've got cholesterol deposits in your arteries. So if you eat cholesterol, it's going to cause a problem. Turns out neither of those things is true. And with cholesterol, is heart disease, it's actually a hormonal and an immune problem, not so much a plumbing problem. And our hormones that go awry are insulin, which drives bad types of cholesterol. So eating carbs and sugar actually causes far more harm than eating fat. In fact, fat may actually protect your cholesterol in many ways. And so we kind of got the whole story wrong. And so the government finally said, we really didn't look at the data. We just sort of like assumed that it was bad. And then when we kind of looked at the data, it really wasn't bad. So we're sorry, 35 years of egg white omelets, we're
yeah. Sorry you had to suffer through those. Yeah. Yeah.
The way they did it was so funny. They were like, it's no longer a nutrient of concern.
Right.
And I thought that was hysterical instead of like really owning the fact that they.
Right. And even talking about the benefits of foods like egg yolks and how nutrient dense they are and that they're a rich source of choline, which is hard to find elsewhere in the diet. And I think that they wanted to save face. And so if they made a big splashy announcement, people would be like, oh man, we're not going to listen to you.
Yeah, so I think the whole cholesterol issue is much more complicated, around fat and diet and carbs. And it turns out, for most people, and there's a lot of genetic diversity in how people handle different foods, whether it's carbohydrates or fats. And there are different responses that you can get to the same diet in different people. And I've seen this as a clinician. So it's humbling. It's not easy to say, oh, we'll just eat this way. Like, you're a practicing physician. I'm a practicing physician. Like, you get humbled by seeing, oh shoot, I like thought this was going to be good, but it actually made this person worse. And I'm like, I don't understand what's going on here. And I think we're learning more about the genetic diversity around how we respond to different things. But for the most part, Americans, 70% of us are overweight, And for most of those people, it's insulin resistance. And insulin resistance is actually made better by fat and improved the quality of cholesterol. I just saw someone today. I looked at their lipids. I was blown away. Their HDL went from 36 to 60 by switching them from a high-carb to a high-fat diet and saturated fat. And I'm like, whoa, this is impressive. And their triglycerides plummeted, and their LDL went up a little bit, but the ratio improved and the quality and the size improved. They went from having a lot of small particles to having none. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, like, this is interesting. And I think we really, as you and I have a unique perspective, because a lot of people talking about this aren't actually doing it. Right. And I think it changes how you think about it, because you go, well, I think this is the truth. And you try it, and it's like, it doesn't work. And you go, oh, what's
it? Yeah, what happens when someone goes on a keto diet and their LDL particle number goes up to 3,500? You know, is that necessarily a good thing? I mean, it's maybe they lose weight and their blood sugar improves, but their LDLP goes above 3,000, then that person's going to require a more nuanced approach. It's not just the simple heuristics that we can rely on in those cases. And that's, yeah, I agree. I mean, that's what you get when you're a clinician and you're working on the front lines. You actually see that. And so it becomes a lot more difficult to stick to a certain belief system when you see evidence to the contrary every day, right?
I think you just said something really important, which is that a lot of people out there giving advice have belief systems. Mm-hmm. This is not about your beliefs. This is about what the data show and what patients actually manifest in response to different things. So it's, you know, there are a lot of people who've built their careers on a certain dogma, whether it's low fat or vegan. And it's not, I mean, I had a very close friend who's built their career on being a vegan. And she said, Mark, don't tell anybody this, but like, I had to start eating animal protein because I was not feeling well and I was unhealthy. And I was I can't say it in public, you know? Like, I'm like, listen, I'm going to change my mind. Like, if you look at my books from 10, 15 years ago, I was recommending low saturated fat diets because that's what I thought the data showed. And I think as I've evolved, I've learned more and more. I think the data has improved. I changed my mind because I want to know what the truth is. I'm not stuck to a particular belief or dogma.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's so important. And it's a way that we can serve our patients and just the community at large by being willing to admit we're wrong. I mean, that's a core part of science, is proceeding from the assumption that we are wrong, you know, and we're going to create some ideas, and then we're going to test them out and see if they work. And I mean, this is probably a good segue to talk about grains and beans and dairy. For me, that was something where I kind of diverged from the paleo community very early on. And, you know, for folks who've read my first book, I called it more of a paleo template, because I didn't, when I looked at the research on grains and beans and dairy, I saw that, kind of like fat, you know, it was complicated. There were some situations where I think people should be avoiding beans and dairy and grains pretty strictly. And there are other situations where if those are consumed in moderate amounts in the context of a, you know, nutrient-dense diet with meat and fish and fruits and vegetables, it's fine. And so I know you address this in your book as well. So I'm curious, you know, where you've come down on this issue.
Yeah, you call it paleo template. I call it pegan. And mm-hmm. It was a total spoof and just a joke I made up when I was at a conference.
It's a great term.
I love it. So funny. Because I was like on a panel with Joel Kahn, who's a kind of a militant vegan cardiologist, low fat. And Frank Lippmann, who's a, you know, paleo functional medicine doc.
Oh, was that the mind-body?
Yeah, it was mind-body.
Yeah, where we were, together.
Yeah, exactly. You were there when I
said that. Yeah, I remember that. I was there for the genesis.
Yes, you were. It's true. And I was like, it was a total joke. I was like, well, you're paleo, you're vegan, I must be vegan. And then I went home and I started thinking about it. I'm like, well, you know, there's more in common than there are differences. And
absolutely.
And I think, you know, setting up these extreme hard and fast rules is a problem. Some people can tolerate dairy, but the question is, which dairy, right? Is it you know, factory farmed, hybridized cows, which have high levels of hormones and high levels of A1 casein, which is inflammatory, or is it a goat milk or some heirloom cow or grass fed meat? Like, there's just a lot of differences. Right. So I think you're right, and I think that's in the book Food, What the Heck Should I Eat. This is sort of where I take the middle ground and go, okay, of all the foods, I mean, you know, we're highly adaptable beings. We can eat all sorts of different diets. But as you and I know, if you're eating a healthy diet and you're, you know, including a lot variety of foods, as long as you're choosing the high quality foods, many people can tolerate a lot of diversity. But you and I treat very sick people, and they might need, you know, to be more aggressive with restricting things like dairy or gluten different grains or beans. And I think really looking at within each category, what should we be eating? Like, let's take grains, for example. You know, grains are relatively new from an evolutionary point of view. We've been able to eat them and survive, but, you know, there's evidence that, you know, our body has shrunk and our you know, our health is not as good once we start eating grains from an agricultural point of view. But the grains now that we eat are problematic. Most of the grains we eat are wheat, corn, and rice. Now, wheat has been hybridized, so it's not the wheat of our ancestors. It's got much higher levels of something called amylopectin A, which is a very starchy, high superstarch. It's like raises your blood sugar more than table sugar. And it contains, it's bred in a way to make it a resistant to drought and different things. And it's called dwarf wheat. And the guy who invented it won the Nobel Prize. But there's problems with it. And it's when you breed plants, you combine genes. It's not like humans where you get, you know, one copy from your mom, one copy from your dad. You get, you know, 46 chromosomes. You get 23 from each. You get 46 yourself. In plants, you get like 46 plus 46 is 92. And when you have genes, you make proteins. And those proteins in the wheat are gliadin proteins, some of them. And they are the ones that are in dwarf wheat are much, much more likely to cause inflammation, leaky gut, which is why we've seen so much more gluten sensitivity. So if you're going to eat wheat, you know, maybe you want to eat heirloom wheat, like einkorn wheat. If you're going to eat grains, maybe you want to eat kind of non-grain grains like buckwheat or quinoa, or things like teff that are a little bit different and that may also be better tolerated and they're less likely to be GMO or hybridized. So I think we have to be smart about what we're eating. It's not a categorical no or yes, but it depends on what's going on.
Absolutely. And I mean, at the risk of pointing out the obvious, the biggest difference in terms of how we're eating grains versus even our agricultural ancestors is, you know, most people are eating them in the form of grain-based desserts that have a lot of sugar. I mean, the top six foods in the American diet are grain-based desserts, bread, pizza, alcohol, chicken dishes, primarily fried chicken. If you look at what the grains are in those, we're not talking about someone eating a bowl of quinoa, you know, with their salad. We're talking about someone eating highly processed and refined grains that have sugar added to them in most cases. So that's a totally, totally different thing.
And even whole grain flours, like brown rice flour or quinoa flour, those can be problematic because you're increasing the surface area of the food and you're increasing its ability to raise your blood sugar. And it's very different than right. Eat the whole grain.
There's this concept of cellular and acellular carbohydrates. Like if you're, you know, when all of that surface area is exposed, that can really feed the bad bacteria in your gut. Whereas when the cells are still intact, that's more of a, you know, a traditional way of eating them, and more, you know, it's better for the good bugs in our gut. So we're learning so much, and it's so much. I mean, the good news is it's a lot simpler, and that's what I love about your book, Food, What the Heck Should I Eat, is that it's really simplifying things that have been made to be too complicated, but at the same time, it's not oversimplifying, because as we've pointed out in, you know, throughout the conversation, you can't just rely on, it's not black or white in every different situation.
Exactly, and I think that, you know, the way I've designed the book is really very practical. It's like what we know, what we don't know, what does the science say? And then one of like the 10 things you need to know about grains, you know. Mm-hmm. One, we don't need to eat them at all because we didn't evolve in them and we can live happily without them. Yeah. You know, flour equals sugar. If you are eating flour, no matter if it's a whole grain or not, it's just like having sugar. Gluten is a problem, and I explain why, and why the grains we're eating now aren't the grains our grandparents ate, and why gluten-free food isn't necessarily good for you, and why you should be a cereal killer, and why oatmeal is not a health food, and what's wrong with corn, and why your rice may not be so good, and why some grains are okay. And so, and then I go through exactly, you know, where to get the healthy grains. What are they? How much should you eat? I mean, there are some people advocating out there that we should eat 2 cups of grains a day and 2 cups of beans. Right. You know, that might be a problem. And I talk about you know, minimizing these things and even meat, you know, not having, you know, a 16 ounce steak, but having 4 ounces or 6 ounces, you know, and I think that's a very different kind of diet than we're typically eating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm excited about this book. I think it's been a long time coming, and I don't know how you find the time to write these 14 books in the midst of everything else that you're doing, but I'm grateful that you do, because I think it's going to help a lot of people. And especially this one. Yeah. I think it's just, it's a perfect topic. I mean, it's this perfect time for it, because especially with, you know, social media and blogs and summits, and people are kind of overloaded with information. It's not a lack of information, it's too much, and just not being able to make sense of it. So I think this book is perfectly timed.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, I tried to make it really simple to use, common sense, accessible, and people can just pick up and read any chapter. If they want to know about grains, they can read that. If they want to know about dairy, they can read about that, or meat, and then they can know what to do. And then there's really great resources in there. Well, if you're going to eat meat, where should you find it? How do you get it for cheaper? What are the things you should look for? Yeah. And each category. What about vegetables? Are there vegetables we shouldn't really be eating that much of? For example, like, you know, raw button mushrooms or alfalfa sprouts may have toxins and cancer-causing things in them.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do you know in each category what you should and shouldn't eat? And I also include the environmental considerations and even the political considerations. We think avocados mm-hmm. are awesome, but in Mexico, if you're trying to, you know, live a life that doesn't support harming people or nature, you know, they've cleared huge amounts of land, and a lot of the avocado farms are actually controlled by the drug cartels, and the workers mm-hmm. are, you know, mistreated, and it's a mess. And so these are what we call blood avocados. Like, they're blood diamonds. There's blood avocados. So maybe you should get them from California instead.
Yeah.
So that's really the way I try to make it all clear and allow people to sort of choose for themselves what makes sense.
Yeah. And that's what it's about. So this comes out, I've heard a couple of different things. There's the
February
20th or the 27th. Okay. The 27th. So, I think this podcast will be coming out either just before that, or maybe even on that same day. So you can either pre-order on Amazon or order it if this is the 27th when this comes out, and it's going to be available in all bookstores everywhere books are sold. Anything else you want to let us know about it?
Foodthebook.com, and I'm giving away free chapters. I've got free cooking videos on there. You know, the 4 big lies and myths that we've been exposed to, a nice video there. So I have a lot of free content. People can kind of get familiar with what the book's about and also get a lot of value without actually having to buy the book. Although, of course, I want you to buy the book. But you can go to foodthebook.com. And, you know, it's one of those things that should be on everybody's coffee table and everybody's bathroom and everybody's kitchen, so they know what to do and take with them shopping. There's even a great shopping guide of, like, here's, you know, because a lot of, at the end of each chapter, you go, eat this, don't eat that. If you eat grains, here are the grains to eat. Don't eat these. If you're going to eat meat, here's the meat to eat. Here, don't eat these, right? So it's really, really simple and clear.
Really good to a book to give to people too, like friends or family members who are, you know, maybe just totally overwhelmed again. I mean, which is a lot of people that I come across at this point. And it's such a good kind of summary and overview of all of these topics that we've been talking about, which are really the most important ones when it comes down to just sitting down and like, what am I going to eat? You know, what should I buy when I go to the store? I mean, it really does boil down to that. So thanks for writing this book, Mark, and getting it out there, and for coming back to talk to us, and look forward to the next time.
Yeah, it's great. I'm looking forward to it. The book, you know, in the UK is being called WTF Should I Eat? And it's got a different cover.
Yeah.
They thought, what the heck, was too mild.
Those people across the pond. Yeah, it's always interesting to see how those differences shake out. But so those of you, I got actually a pretty big audience in the UK. So it's WTF, should I eat?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, cool. All right. Well, thanks again, Mark. And we'll have you back soon. Take care. That's the end of this episode of Revolution Health Radio. If you appreciate the show and want to help me create a healthier and happier world, please head over to iTunes and leave us a review. They really do make a difference. If you'd like to ask a question for me to answer on a future episode, you can do that at chriskresser.com/podcast question. You can also leave a suggestion for someone you'd like me to interview there. If you're on social media, you can follow me at twitter.com/chriskresser or facebook.com/chriskresserlac. I post a lot of articles and research that I do throughout the week there that never makes it to the blog or podcast, so it's a great way to stay abreast of the latest developments. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you next time.